Kozue Kaworu was on her way back from the chemistry building, where she'd spent much of the evening repeating an experiment in search of a more presentable result, back to her room when she saw them, like apparitions out of the past. Toga Kiryu and Kyoichi Sayonji, heading from the bell tower to the senior dorm where Sayonji had always lived in his student days. She stopped walking and stared at them, amazed. Toga had left the academy the year before, and he should have graduated by now anyway. Kozue had replaced his replacement as student council president. But here he came, big as life, smiling that easy smile he had, wearing the same old student council uniform he'd always worn. Sayonji, trudging along behind him, looked like he'd just come out of a cave somewhere. He was wearing a rather tattered blue kendo gi, and his hair was in a wild tangle around his lean, haggard face. He was holding a walking stick as if it were either a sword or some kind of all-important talisman. "Well, well, Miss Kaworu," said Toga smoothly as he noticed her standing by the path. He came up next to her, slipped his arm familiarly around her, and murmured, "You're looking adorable as always. I love what the council uniform does for you." Kozue straight-armed him away from her, saying, "Hands off, Kiryu. You only sampled the merchandise. You didn't put a down payment on it." Toga looked mockingly hurt. "Come, come, Kozue," he chided her gently. "At the time, you said I was the best you'd ever had." "So I had a lot of terrible ones," she replied shortly, "and you were only lousy. Don't let it go to your head. What the hell are you and your loser pal doing back here, anyway? I thought you'd turned your back on good old Otori and headed out to seek your fortune under the big blue sky." "And I thought Sayonji was dead," she didn't add out loud. "I'm here by special request of the deputy chairman," Toga replied, unflapped by her rudeness. "As for my dear friend Kyoichi, well, he's just come back from a journey of self-discovery." Sayonji was very, very proud of himself for not bursting out laughing. "Well, you'd better not be planning to just slip back into your old seat on the council," Kozue informed him flatly. "I'm in it now, and I'm not leaving without a legitimate election. Our useless dilettante of a deputy chairman and I may not see eye to eye on some things, but even he can't deny that I've done a good job keeping this school running while he's been busy doing whatever the hell is more important." "Perish the thought," Toga told her. "I wear the uniform for old time's sake, nothing more. You go right on running things, my dear. You and Keiko and... what's his name? My dear sister's little flunky." "Tsuwabuki," Kozue corrected him automatically. "Where is Nanami, anyway? Did she come back with you?" Sayonji pricked up his ears. He wanted to hear the answer to this question, too. "Nanami's not been well," said Toga delicately. "It's a female problem, or so I'm told." He adjusted his collar uncomfortably and went on, "I don't think you'll be seeing her again for a while." "Oh." Kozue looked actually worried about that for just a moment and said in a softer tone, "Well, if you see her, tell her I said to get well soon." Toga nodded and replied, "I'm sure it'll make her day." "Oh, and if you're still tight with the deputy chairman, and he deigns to take an interest in the running of his academy any longer," Kozue added, back to her adversarial tone, "tell him I'd like my treasurer back one of these days. We've got the spring festival coming up, not that you'd know it, with all this damn snow still on the ground." "I'll see," Toga promised. "Shiori is helping us with a very delicate project right now, which doesn't leave her a lot of free time. It's very important to the school, though, so don't fret. She's being put to good use." "Uh-huh," said Kozue skeptically. "Well, if you'll excuse me," she said, "some of us have work to do." "See you around, Kozue," Toga replied, patting her rather low on the back as she passed. "Do that again," she snapped frostily, "and I'll break your goddamned arm." Toga laughed as if she'd said something funny. and he and Sionji proceeded in the opposite direction. As she passed out of earshot, he stopped, his expression instantly becoming one of contempt. "Worthless little tramp," he muttered. "It does no good to lock the barn after you've let everybody you know ride the horse." Sionji gave his ex-best friend a strange look for the fractured metaphor, but said nothing. He was too busy mulling over the subtext of all Toga had said to Kozue. As usual, the red-headed dupe was being a lot more informative than he thought he was being. "What did you mean," he asked slowly, "about Nanami?" Toga turned to him, looking puzzled, and then laughed. "Oh, that! Here, you'll appreciate this." Sionji resolved not to recoil as Toga put a friendly arm around his shoulders. As they walked the rest of the way to Sionji's old dorm, the red-headed duelist told him the story. "What made it so awful, and it was an awful story in its own right, was how funny Toga seemed to think it all was. He'd changed, Sionji realized, since the last time they'd been together. Then, sure, Toga had been dissipated and cruel, like always. But he'd been showing signs of recovery. Much like Sionji, he'd been making at least a vague effort at becoming an actual person again. Sionji had still hated him and not wanted anything further to do with him, but at least he was trying. He'd even decided he was in love with Tenjo, that she was the woman who could change his ways. Now there was a star-crossed decision if Sionji had ever seen one, and Toga thought he was an idiot for loving the Rose Bride. But now he was completely twisted, Akio Otori's sniggering little goblin henchman. Oh, he still looked the same, tall and graceful and handsome, the idol of all the school's girls, well, except for Kozue Kaworu, apparently. But inside he was the kind of man who could do something like that to his own sister, just for the fun of watching her mind break, and because Akio told him to. Sionji ground his teeth and forced him to let Toga live. It wouldn't do to break cover yet. More, much more, than his own satisfaction was at stake. Still, it was another thing to add to the list of crimes that Akio Otori and Toga Kiryu had to pay for. Sionji hadn't particularly liked Nanami. She was a graceless, unpleasant, spoiled little bitch when you got right down to it. But she had deserved better than this. Anyone deserved better than this. Somehow he managed to be cordial to Toga throughout an improvised meal cobbled together in the dorm's closed kitchen, then through good nights at the doorway to his own room. Then, finally alone, he threw himself back on his own bed. What a peculiar feeling it was to be here again. Had no one needed this room in the more than a year he'd been gone? And let out a huge, wordless, sighing groan that encapsulated everything he'd felt since arriving here again. "Ah, Wakaba," he thought to himself, "your sweet Sionji has landed in the middle of one hell of a mess." Wakaba and Caitlin sat alone in the castle library, Serge curled up on the couch between them with his head helpfully in Wakaba's lap. They hadn't said anything in about an hour, since Juri and Mickey had gone upstairs. Truth be told, Kate would have liked to go to bed herself, but she didn't want to wander off and leave Wakaba alone. It wouldn't have been very friendly of her. "Do you suppose we should call Utena and Corwin?" Wakaba mused suddenly. "I mean, I know they said not to call them unless it was a dire emergency, but Sionji getting dragged back home by Akio ought to qualify, don't you think?" Kate shook her head. "I've been thinking about that," she said, "and I don't think so. There's nothing they could do about it now anyway. It'd just disrupt Corwin's preparations and worry them both. I still think our only shot is to wait for Corwin to complete his trial." Yeah, I guess you're right. Wakaba sighed. Some big hero I am. Kate reached across her tiger and patted Wakaba's arm. Chin up, she said. Kyuichi's a good student. I'm on the verge of recommending him for his journeyman's test. He's not stupid, and if he's still a little crazy, it's the good kind, she added with a grin. He'll be fine. I hope so. Wakaba chuckled, half bitterly. At least Himemi is missing, she added. If he doesn't see her around, there's a chance he won't come completely unglued. Anthy had risen, dressed, and begun to contemplate the bleak, hopeless task of getting through the day when the elevator chimed, announcing another visit from the thing that thought it was her brother. Perfect, she thought, and sighed. But when Akio, now dressed again in the everyday clothes he'd usually worn when running the school, emerged, it was Nanami he spoke to, not Anthy. Nanami, he said, you must be tired. Run along to bed. I've got someone here who can take over for you until tonight. Nanami didn't reply. She gave him a skittish look, then skirted around him and darted for the elevator. Charming girl, Akio observed dryly. And so well-mannered since her brother started, returning her affections. Now then, Kyuichi, I trust you remember my sister Anthy, he purred. And Anthy pressed her lips together in a thin line as Kyuichi Sionji, looking just like he always had in the bad old days, strode out from behind the deputy chairman. He wore his old student council vice president's uniform, cleaned and pressed, and his wavy green hair was free, flowing around his sharply handsome face and down his slim back. His eyes had contracted down to the pinpricks of black that indicated he was having one of his psychotic episodes. His right hand was white-knuckled and clenched around a length of dark-stained wood that he held as if it were his only hope of salvation. He stared at her and gave a high, nervous giggle as the corner of his mouth turned up once or twice in a tiny, quivering smile. Oh, yes, I remember. I remember. He started forward, only to be blocked by Akio's arm. You are here to prevent her from leaving the tower, Sionji. Remember that. And whatever you do, do not touch her. Do you understand me? Sionji nodded jerkily, his eyes never leaving Anthy's face, but she saw his hands twitch on the length of wood. Good, Akio said, and then, with a brief, amused smile for Anthy's benefit, he left. Anthy swallowed, and then she tried to put a winning smile on her face. Kyuichi, she began, you really shouldn't keep me here. And then she realized that as the elevator door had sighed shut, Sionji's pupils had dilated back to their normal size. His right hand's white-knuckled grip on that length of wood didn't relax any, but his left hand relaxed, and he stepped forward. No, no, he mumbled, his voice still laced with madness, totally at odds with the faint, calm grin on his face. I can't let you out. You'd only hurt yourself, frail thing that you are. Had he winked? He reached up, drew a finger down the line of her jaw, then let it rest on her shoulder for an instant before turning away and moving around her in a nervous circle. And besides, the grand duelist, he shot her a look, will have my head on a platter if I allow anything to happen to you. I like my head. I like being able to look at you. Look, but never touch. No, no. You belong to the grand duelist, and that is a claim I will never dispute. You were one with great sacrifice, with great power. The grand duelist? Of course Akio would kill him if she escaped. but his eyes were sane, held no trace of fear. And Akio was no longer the Grand Duelist. That title belonged to Utena, because she had beaten him. But that meant... Sayonji shook his head. No, my flower, my beauteous one, you must stay here. Here, where there are 6 able fighters and my humble self to defend you against all comers. Another penetrating look, and keep you safely housed. He smiled, manically, and laughed, and Anthy understood. 6 of Akio's duelists between her and freedom, and 1 who would help her. But the 2 of them couldn't defeat all 6 alone, not when 1 was Akio, and another, in all likelihood, Lafarga. The Grand Duelist, Sayonji went on, gesturing grandly and still laughing. The one who commands my undivided loyalty has declared that you must be kept safe and unharmed, and so I will keep you so. The laugh cut off, and he whispered hoarsely, Even if it costs my life, it will be worth it, for you are the light of my eyes. Yes, oh yes. Anthy stared at him, and then she reached up and ran her hand down his jawline. But surely, Kyuichi, she purred, even as her eyes bored into his and belied her seductive tone, surely you'd do anything for me? Even get me out of here? Can you do it? Her eyes asked. No! He roared, catching her around her narrow waist with his long, powerful hands and dragging her to him, nearly crushing the breath from her lungs. I will not! I cannot! He bent his head over hers, kissed the crown of her head, and whispered, I will try to help as I can, Anthy, but there are too many to fight now, not without Utena's help, and she's not here, not yet. Anthy beat, ineffectually, and she wasn't really trying, at his chest. This is dangerous, she breathed between thumps. His hands tightened around her. He is a fool. He sees what he expects, he murmured. Ah, my rose bride, how I've missed you, he said more loudly. I will never let you go, not without a fight. Let me go, Anthy moaned, pushing, and then she murmured, Can you survive if he finds out? Probably not. Sayonji muttered before he continued ranting, letting her go as he swung his arms wide expansively. How I've longed to hold you, even in the great cities of Toronto, of Worcester, where I learned my loyalty to the Grand Duelist, he boomed. Even in the great desert where the sun overhead baked the soul from my body, your vision bloomed before my eyes. Anthy retreated to her couch, trying to do her best to look like she was afraid of him, as her mind raced. He'd been with Utena, wherever she was. She was still trying to get back here, but Akio must have summoned Sayonji first. And now they had to wait, for an opening or for Utena to return, perhaps with more allies like Sayonji. But at least now, even if they couldn't talk openly, she had one friend with her inside Akio's defenses. That gave her some small kernel of hope, but not much. Akio stepped briefly into the small room next to the kitchen and asked Toga, Anything? Toga moved the cup of an earphone from one of his ears, still listening with the other one, and shook his head, his expression a peculiar mix of disgust and amusement. He's just ranting. The usual stupidity about how she's his flower and he'll never let her go. And about the places he's been to. Ever heard of a city called Toronto? Akio looked confused. No, I can't say that I have. Me neither, Togo replied. Then he chuckled and added, All that time in the great desert must have baked what was left of his brain, before flipping the earphone back into position. Akio shook his head and left the room to attend to other things. Sayonji would be useful for a week or two, anyway. And after that, it would hardly matter. This concludes Overture in E, the symphony will return.